It's time for Midday Edition on KPBS. Billions of dollars in medical research are at risk amid Trump's cuts. Today, a panel of scientists will join us to talk about how that may impact their research. I'm Jade Hindman with conversations that keep you informed, inspired, and engaged. San Diego is a hub for biomedical research, but scientists fear funding cuts could change that.
We do, you know, really important work that helps everyone, and I'm very nervous for public health and that impact.
What this could mean for the next generation of scientists and even the local economy. That's ahead on Midday Edition. The Trump administration continues to make significant funding changes to medical research, which has now been hampered across the country, including here in San Diego. So this hour, we'll discuss the impact on medical research and what this could mean going forward. Our panelists today include Sarah Lemire, an assistant professor at UC San Diego's School of Medicine. Sarah, welcome.
Thank you.
Also with us is Kiyomi Kamori, Senior Director of Translational Medicine at Uniquity Bio. Kiyomi, welcome to you too.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Glad to have you. Also, Liana Rosito, a biomedical graduate student researcher at UC San Diego. Liana, it's great to have you on as well.
Excited to be here.
Great to have you all here. And before we get to our conversation, a disclaimer, all opinions expressed today are their own and not that of their employers. Okay, so let's have you all briefly talk about your research. Sarah, I'll start with you. What do you specialize in?
So I focus primarily on HIV cure research. And so most of what I do is trying to understand the mechanisms that allow the virus to hide throughout the body. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the eventual goal is to be able to not just treat HIV, but also to get rid of it.
Yeah, very important work there. Liana, how about you?
Yeah, I'm an Alzheimer's disease researcher and am just generally interested in aging and the aging brain. Specifically, I'm studying right now how different types of diet can influence and maybe even be protective in Alzheimer's disease, with the eventual goal of, you know, developing dietary mimetics or drugs that might mimic a diet without the intensiveness of going on a strict diet regimen in order to treat Alzheimer's disease and related dementias.
Wow. And recently, just today, I heard that there was a medical breakthrough with Alzheimer's. Something about a protein and being able to delay it in like 40-year-olds and 50-year-olds if they, you know, when you get it early.
So I don't actually know about this specific breakthrough, yeah. But there definitely is a lot of emerging drugs to hopefully treat Alzheimer's disease. But at this point, to my understanding, there is no cure for Alzheimer's disease. There's no way to reverse the pathology, and it is a 100% fatal disease still today.
Underscores the necessity for more research. Kiyomi, you're at Uniquity Bio. Can you talk about the work you do there?
Yeah, sure. So in my role in translational medicine at Uniquity, what we are trying to do is develop therapies for patients living with asthma, chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, and eosinophilic esophagitis. And my job there is to help us understand how the drugs that we're developing work and how to help us target them to the patients that are going to best respond to them.
Wow, very important work you all are doing. And still, the NIH funds much of the medical research across the country. How are you all being impacted by these cuts, Sarah?
Well, so it's hard to know where to start with that. So some of the funding mechanisms that I was planning to apply for have been eradicated. And so, you know, I've had to pivot to kind of other types of funding mechanisms. Additionally, there's been a blackout of the Federal Register. And what that means is that when grants get reviewed, they have kind of two phases. There's a study section, and then there's a council meeting to determine if they're going to be funded. And before either of those meetings can happen, the meeting has to be published in the Federal Register 2 weeks prior, at least. So they did just reboot the Federal Register, and so we are starting to have study section meetings again. But we had a blackout for a couple of months. And so that has delayed something like 15,000 grant reviews.
Oh, my goodness. And your position is funded entirely by the NIH?
That's correct. All of my salary is funded by the NIH.
Wow. And Liana, I'm sure you're seeing a similar impact on your work. As a student researcher, how are you affected by these cuts?
Yeah, so I'm currently funded by an NIA T32, which is a funding mechanism for trainees, typically graduate and postdoctoral trainees, in order for them to really develop a specialization in a particular research area, in this case, Alzheimer's disease. And so training grants and other grants that go to trainees, for example, like graduate trainees, these are all being either slashed, or the opportunities that would have been posted are being retracted. And so I think that's really scary in terms of funding younger researchers. And additionally, we're also seeing graduate programs reducing their admissions for incoming graduate researchers. And some of them have even started retracting admissions to students who had previously gotten in. And so overall, kind of the graduate student body as a whole is really being hurt, both in terms of funding, but also just in terms of number of positions available.
Mm. And Kiyomi, a lot of the focus has been on how academic institutions will be impacted, but we could also see the consequences bleeding into the private industry, too. How could this affect biotech?
Yeah, I think, you know, the immediate effects are maybe not as felt as broadly within biotech and pharma, as we are not as reliant on NIH and NSF funding. However, there are a lot of early stage startup companies or early biotechs that do apply for grant money, and that does help them continue their research. I think where we also have a lot of concern is that as you cut that basic research, you're really going to start impacting those fundamental biology and medical discoveries that drive drug development. Over 99% of drugs that were approved between 2010 and 2019 came from basic research funded by the NIH and NSF. The industry, while we do spend a lot of money to help study how the drugs are working and make sure they're safe and effective, we don't put as much focus onto that early basic discovery research and the innovation. And I think that that's where we think we're going to start seeing impacts, as the innovation that the U.S. has really driven for many, many years, with that loss of funding, those researchers are going to go elsewhere, and the U.S. will not be at the forefront of innovation the way it was in the past.
It really goes to show the relationship between local research institutions and biotech and pharma, right?
Yep.
Yeah. Sarah, there are also indirect costs that could be affected by these cuts. The Trump administration is attempting to put a 15% cap there. So what do these indirect costs include?
So indirect costs are meant to fund infrastructure. So that includes buildings, utilities. It also includes administrative support, because to do what we do, you know, we can't just do the science. We need people who are taking care of our labs, who are, you know, making sure that everything's being ordered appropriately, that our grants are getting in. Ironically, you know, we need an administrative support to submit grants. so that's problematic. A 15% cap is going to be extremely detrimental. You know, most universities have a predetermined rate that they negotiated with the NIH. And for example, UCSD's was 59%. So that's going to be a pretty dramatic loss of funding if that cap is allowed to go forward. The university already came out and said that they stand to lose somewhere along the lines of $150 million per year.
Wow. Liana, as someone currently working in a lab, do you have anything to add to that?
Yeah, I just want to emphasize what Sarah said, that this indirect cost, I think, is often thought to go to some kind of bloated admin, but I definitely think that's a misconception that the public has about indirect costs. Overall, they're really going to fund kind of typical jobs like admin staff, custodial staff, construction staff, just typical San Diegans who, you know, depend on these jobs for their livelihoods. And I think, you know, they're going to be the ones who might feel the effects of these cuts most directly and first.
One other piece to add to the indirect cost, too, mm-hmm. as a working in biotech, I do collaborate a lot with academic researchers. And when we write those contracts, industry also pays those overheads. And again, they're critical pieces. A lot of institutes also use them to fund core facilities that are shared between the labs that the labs couldn't support on their own. A lot of those facilities, you know, are multi-million dollars of worth of equipment that, you know, are a shared asset for the institute that are supported by indirects.
You know, you're all involved in critical work that helps us better understand these diseases and find the treatment for them. If all these studies were to be halted or just done away with altogether, I mean, what could that mean for public health going forward? Kiyomi?
I mean, biology is continually advancing. You know, we saw that with the COVID-19 pandemic. That was a new-to-us virus, but it wasn't a new class of viruses. And the reason we were able to respond so quickly was because we had a lot of research that had been done. And so we knew how to understand what was happening. You know, there were certainly fits and starts along the way. And as scientists, we don't always get things right the first time. But we pivot and we evolve. And I think without that infrastructure, we would not have had the development of vaccines at the speed that we did. And it certainly wasn't the first pandemic. It's certainly probably not going to be the last. And there's all kinds of new health threats that are coming out beyond viruses as, you know, things get warmer and environmental pollutants go in different directions. You know, we really need that infrastructure.
Mm. Sarah, what are your thoughts on the impact on public health?
Well, I think it's going to be devastating, not just to our country either, but across the world. You know, and this doesn't just tie into scientific funding. You know, we've also had the issue of shutting down USAID. And since I work in HIV, it's kind of on the forefront of my mind because USAID and also PEPFAR, which is responsible for dispensing all of these antiretrovirals in developing countries, are, you know, they have been very handicapped. So we're losing the innovation side of HIV cure research, as well as vaccine research and also, you know, better therapeutics. So that's going to decrease the quality of life for people with living with HIV, and I'm only talking about HIV right now. But it's also going to impact access to medications and therapeutics worldwide for HIV. And that's going to be true for probably, you know, every devastating disease you can think about, you know, especially things like cancer, heart disease, the list goes on.
Mm-hmm. You know, and the Trump administration may cut all funding for the CDC's HIV prevention division. What worries you about that?
I don't even know where to begin. So I worry that we aren't going to have the same kind of response, not just to HIV, but to viruses in general. You know, it actually stands to reason that a lot of the infrastructure we had for the COVID-19 response was built off of what we had done for HIV. So getting rid of, you know, all of this funding and all of these programs is going to severely blunt our response to new pathogens coming in. And there may be some that are similar to HIV that we won't be able to respond to as quickly as well.
Mm. And Liana, I want to bring you in here because you were actually part of a clinical trial that was funded by the NIH for a rare disease. Tell me about that and how these trials could be affected.
Yeah, so I am an individual living with a rare autoimmune disorder. I have an undiagnosed rheumatological disorder, and it developed about 10 years ago when I was in college. And we had a very difficult time, you know, trying to figure out what was going on and get me care. So I joined the Undiagnosed Disease Network, which is funded by the NIH. And because of that, I was able to find a treatment plan and go into full remission, and that's why I'm here today studying disease myself. I would not be here without that NIH-funded study. I might still be sick. And rare disease specifically, I think, is going to be hurt. I mean, everything is going to be hurt by what's happening, but rare disease specifically is going to be hurt as well. It's already so challenging to study rare illnesses. but we're getting better all the time. And this is just going to, you know, halt people with diseases that we don't have diagnoses for or treatments for or even cures for. You know, yeah, I think clinical trials are definitely one of the things that are at risk, but clinical trials are also the best weapon we have against diseases we can't treat yet. If we can't, you know, have clinical trials, we can't progress medicine. So that really makes me nervous.
Yeah.
I mean, I hear you all talk and like the impact of these cuts could be detrimental. What are your thoughts on these cuts and even like why they're happening? To what end?
I mean, I think, you know, the overall intent of a lot of, I think, what is happening right now is to try to get, you know, the U.S. budget under control and make sure that we weren't being wasteful. And on its surface, that sounds like a very reasonable thing. And, you know, I don't think you'd find any one of us to say we disagree with trying to eliminate waste. I think that the U.S. government operates in a very broad way, in very regulated spaces, and, you know, maybe spending time understanding what those budgets are really going to and what they're really supporting and how much of it is really, you know, quote unquote, wasteful or not. You know, you have to take sort of more of a scalpel to something than a chainsaw, let's say. And, you know, maybe an approach that worked or doesn't work, depending on who you ask in big tech, isn't necessarily the right approach to take with large government agencies.
Sarah, your thoughts?
Probably just mostly echoing what Kiyomi just said. I think that a lot of the things that are being cut here are not well understood by the people making those decisions. And, you know, they're not wasteful things. They are essential things. And to me, it feels very short-sighted.
Liana?
I just want to add that overall, it makes me really nervous for public health and the public impact that this is going to have. I think there's overall kind of a science is a big black box for most of the public. And I think us as scientists can do a better job communicating what we do on a day-to-day basis and where these resources are actually going. And I think it's fair that people are confused about why science costs so much money. But ultimately, we do, you know, really important work that helps everyone. And I'm very nervous for public health and that impact.
Coming up, we continue our conversation with the broader impact of funding cuts, especially to the next generation of scientists.
Science doesn't just mean working at the bench. Scientists spread out across so many different places that touch our lives and human health that I think if we don't have well-qualified trainees, that's going to get harder and harder to do in the future.
Hear more when KPBS Midday Edition returns.
San Diego is known as America's finest city.
America's finest city.
I love that that's our name because it's kind of true.
From KPBS, this is The Finest, a podcast about the people, art, and movements redefining culture in San Diego. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to KPBS Midday Edition. I'm Jade Hindman. We've been talking about how the Trump administration's new policies and funding cuts could impact science across San Diego. I'm here with my guest, Sarah Lemire, assistant professor at UCSD School of Medicine, Kiyomi Komori, senior director of translational medicine at Uniquity Bio, and Liana Rosito, a biomedical graduate student researcher at UCSD. So we've been talking at length here about what these cuts could mean for medical research. What are you hearing from your peers in how these attacks on science are affecting them? Liana?
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. We are very afraid for our futures and, you know, the futures of the graduate students who are currently applying or the, you know, young high schooler and college students who want to be scientists in the future. It is so uncertain right now. And, you know, we all go into this field just because we want to, you know, better public health and better science and, you know, ideally make the world a better place. And right now it just feels like an impossible obstacle to surmount. And for myself, I'm going to be on the job market in a year or two, and I just don't know what that's going to look like. And it's really scary to think about maybe needing to leave the U.S., where I've spent my entire life and where I want to make changes here, but I might have to leave to just get a job, and that's really unfortunate.
Kiyomi?
It's hard not to take it personally a little bit when we've dedicated so much of our time and our lives to really doing research because we want to help people. Most people that go into science don't do it just for funsies. It's a lot of work. Mm-hmm. It's a lot of dedication. And I think what I personally worry about for the future is exactly what Liana was saying, is that, you know, as we turn people away because we are cutting funding, there are going to be fewer qualified trainees to do the jobs that will get us to better and safer and monitored therapies and medicines for people. It's not just people that go into the bench and make the drugs. You know, you need people with PhDs and scientific background to review them and work at the NIH. You need them to be able to go out and do hunt down viruses and things like that. So science doesn't just mean working at the bench. Scientists spread out across so many different places that touch our lives and human health that I think if we don't have well-qualified trainees, that's going to get harder and harder to do in the future.
Hmm. I mean, it sounds like this will really affect the next generations of scientists. Sarah, what are your thoughts?
Well, that is truly my biggest worry. We are already starting to see what they call the brain drain. So France and Canada are both soliciting scientists from the U.S. to go there. There's one university in France that has already gotten 40 U.S. researchers from very prestigious institutions, including Yale and the NIH and George Washington University. So literally everybody I know in science is petrified. We're all very worried about our own positions, about that of young researchers, which, by the way, they're where all the innovation comes from. It's really from the young researchers. And we're going to lose them. You know, they're not going to go into science. Those of us that are already in science are thinking about whether we need to leave the country. That's not going to end well for the U.S.
Yeah. I just want to add one additional point, is that the future scientists that are really going to be hurt the most by this are those that are already underrepresented in science. There are so many government-funded efforts to increase diversity and representation in science. It gives students without opportunity but with lots of, you know, brilliance and potential, it gives them the opportunity to access research at high-quality universities and prepares them to be excellent scientists. And those programs are being slashed across the board. And we need these scientists to help us do better, more representative biomedical research, and we're going to lose them especially, and I think that's going to hurt us as well.
Mm. And, you know, I think what I'm hearing is, and what we know is that the Trump administration is attacking what it calls DEI or diversity, equity, and inclusion. We're seeing it in a federal list of banned words put out by the National Science Foundation. Can you give me some examples of words and how banning them would impact medical research?
Yeah, I'm really passionate about this specific topic because it's so relevant with my research on Alzheimer's disease. So some of the words that the NIH does not want us to use in grants anymore, and they'll even, you know, remove grants from the pile before considering them if you include these words, include women, Black, and Hispanic. Women and Black and Hispanic Americans are almost twice as likely as white and male Americans to get Alzheimer's disease, but now we're not allowed to study the specific vulnerabilities of these populations. And that means we're not going to be able to address the cause of Alzheimer's across the board and be able to treat everyone with Alzheimer's.
Sarah?
Yeah, so at the very beginning, I alluded to a funding mechanism that I had to pivot from, and I didn't get into specifics, but that was actually what's called a diversity supplement. So I have a trainee that I was going to try to fund with that supplement, and they just completely eradicated diversity supplements from the NIH. You know, that's been a fixture there for years. And so, you know, we're facing the loss of, you know, underrepresented groups in science. We're also, you know, like Liana alluded to, we're losing the ability to study conditions in underrepresented groups as well. And that includes women. We make up over half of the population, but we are actually very understudied. Mm-hmm. And that's why we're called underrepresented. We're obviously not a minority, but but we are underrepresented in medical research and in science.
Yeah. And I was just about to bring that up because I feel like we're just now getting to a point where women are actually being researched for medical breakthroughs. And I mean, can you believe that when they put Tylenol on the market, they never tested that on women to see how that might impact women so many years ago? So We're just now getting to that point. How do you all see this impacting that kind of research, Kiyomi?
Yeah, I think it's going to have a huge impact in the clinical space. You know, the FDA had put out guidance a couple of years ago around having better representation and more diversity within clinical studies. And it's so important. You know, as we touched on women, women are disproportionately impacted by autoimmune disease. And there is underlying biology that there's a reason for that, right? We don't really understand what that is. But if we don't test medicines in a broad group of people, we will not know who they're going to work well for and they're not, and who they won't. And we already know that of all the advanced therapies coming through that are breakthroughs and making huge differences in people's lives, not a single one of them works for 100% of the people that take them. In a lot of cases, you know, if you get 30 or 40% of your study population responding, that's a huge success. But when you really dive into it, a lot of times those study populations in the clinical studies are not very diverse. And then when you start taking it out into real world, we start finding out that there is, again, underlying biology because of our background ethnicity, because of our gender, because of the region of the world we live in and our environmental exposures. And so if we're not giving equal access across the boards, you're not going to have things that are going to work in a fair way for everyone. And unfortunately, I think if you don't push and put things in place to encourage people to do the work to make sure that it's representative, unfortunately, the research and the years of this will show, right? It's not going to happen because in some cases it is hard and it takes extra effort, especially in populations who have been discriminated against or marginalized against. And there is, you know, some unfortunate history in the scientific drug development space where things happened that should not have happened. And we can't ignore that, but it does put a hurdle there. And even just knowing that you need to be telling people about clinical studies, right? You have to be out there. You have to be educating the clinicians and everybody and saying, you know, make this an opportunity for all of your patients.
I did want to clarify something going back to the quote-unquote banned words list. Mm-hmm. The NIH, from what I was told, did not receive the same guidance, but they are still kind of picking out a lot of those words in grants and putting them at the bottom of the pile if they see them.
And what does the National Science Foundation do? Who are they?
So the National Science Foundation, to clarify, you know, the NIH does primarily biomedical research. So it's all geared towards advancing medicine in one way or another. The National Science Foundation will tend to fund kind of other topics, and that can include things like computer science advancements. It can include things like, you know, other aspects of biology that are not human-based. So, for example, I've recently served on an NSF panel, actually, and we had some interesting grants on trying to understand antibodies in all of these different species. And you might look at that and say, well, how is that useful? But actually, you know, some of these are potential treatments for, you know, certain pathogens that humans get. And so they are useful.
I mean, and I want to bring up another example we're seeing, you know, where whole pages and data on the CDC's website are being scrubbed. Some of that has since been re-uploaded, but scientists are still worried that the new data has been corrupted. It's like these communities that are already underrepresented are being censored or erased, and I'm curious what your thoughts are on that.
I mean, personally, I find it horrifying, right?
That's
I think that we can't. We shouldn't be deleting things because of words that we find objectionable or out of line with our policies. Facts are facts, and scientific facts are proven, or, you know, at least hold until we prove them wrong. And I think limiting people's access to that kind of information is really dangerous. I also think we probably as a whole need to do better about teaching new generations and even reteaching older generations about critical thinking skills and how to tell when something is factual and when something isn't, and when a source is reliable versus not.
Sarah, you look like you want to add something.
No, I'm just mostly nodding in agreement. horrifying was the exact word that popped to mind when you asked that question. I never thought in my lifetime that I would see that happen in this country, where we're literally scrubbing away history just because it was not white men. That's bizarre.
Still ahead, the economic hit to San Diego.
I can see just enormous impacts to the local economy because the life sciences here, it was 178,000 jobs in San Diego and the county rely on life sciences.
KPBS Midday Edition is back after the break.
San Diego is known as America's finest city.
America's finest city.
I love that that's our name because it's kind of true.
From KPBS, this is The Finest, a podcast about the people, art, and movements redefining culture in San Diego. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to KPBS Midday Edition. I'm Jade Hindman. We're continuing our conversation about what the Trump administration's funding cuts and related orders could mean for science in San Diego. My guests are Sarah Lemire, assistant professor at UCSD School of Medicine, Kiyomi Komori, senior director of translational medicine at Uniquity Bio, and Liana Rosito, a biomedical graduate student researcher. And Sarah, I want to talk more about the broader impact of these cuts. How do you see these funding cuts affecting the local economy?
Oh, gosh. Yeah. So I see it trickling down. You know, Kiyomi mentioned that, you may not see anything happening in the biotech sector right away, but a lot of the innovation comes from academic institutions that are funded by the NIH and the NSF. And so as we lose funding to those institutions and we lose people to other countries, the science is going to slow down. The advancement's going to slow down. And a lot of these private companies that have collaborations with publicly funded institutions, either in San Diego or elsewhere, are going to dry up. They're not going to, if they don't have new drugs to explore, how are they going to have clinical trials? So I can see just enormous impacts to the local economy because the life sciences here, I think it was 178,000 jobs in San Diego and the county rely on life sciences. You know, in 2023, I think that added up to something like $56.6 billion. So we have a tremendous reliance on science in San Diego, you know, not just at our academic institutions, but also we have all these biotech companies and pharmaceutical companies. You know, we are one of the premier spots in the United States for biomedical research and innovation.
No question about that. Kiyomi, how about from that biotech or pharma perspective? Sarah said it might not happen right away, but what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I think it's not as, you know, as immediate of an impact, except for those companies that are dependent upon NIH funding and collaborations to support their research. But, you know, Sarah says Biocom California put out their Life Science 2024 Economic Impact report, and, you know, it is $56.6 billion of economic output that the life sciences brought to San Diego in 2023. And on top of that, as part of that, it's $17.6 billion of labor income. So that's income that people are able to put back into their communities to be able to thrive within San Diego. I think the long-term effects of this and also the instability within the market right now, because we don't know, biotech investment is something that we're all beholden to. And I saw a number today. It's something like $172 billion gap, or I think we'll have to fact check that, but of research that would be done if we could find the funding. And that's a lot of funding that would go to bringing new drugs to market. And, you know, biotech is a risky investment. And so as we pivot away from science, that's going to become riskier and riskier, and we'll probably end up seeing less private dollars moving in to support that space as well.
Are there hiring freezes at UCSD right now?
Yeah.
How many people how short-staffed were you? I don't know. How many people are impacted by that?
Oh, my gosh. I don't have the numbers. I know that UCSD supports something like 20,000 employees, and we're obviously going to be losing some of them. But I don't know off the top of my head, like, what number of positions that's going to impact.
Yeah. Well, and like we mentioned at the top, San Diego is at the forefront of so much research. What other impacts do you see this having on San Diego specifically, Liana?
Yeah, one thing that I haven't had the opportunity to say yet, but I want to emphasize for San Diegans is one of the words that is being censored is trauma. And we have a very large military population and veteran population in San Diego. And if we can't study post-traumatic stress disorder, because trauma is one of the censored words, we're also going to be, you know, not able to better support our veterans. And that will also harm our local San Diegan community.
Oh, so many impacts. I mean, it is an incredibly uncertain time for science. In spite of these attacks, though, what's keeping you all hopeful? Liana?
I'm a graduate student. I'm a trainee. I'm hoping that, you know, things will improve and that I can continue on and do my science. I'm, you know, still tentatively optimistic to, you know, be a scientist one day in academia. And I guess I'm just taking it one day at a time and trying to really just focus on the reason I got into science in the first place. And that's just to benefit public health and, you know, maybe cure Alzheimer's disease one day.
Kiyomi?
Yeah, I think, you know, despite all the headwinds, science is going to keep moving forward. I think the people that are doing it and are dedicated to it are going to keep pushing forward. It may look a little bit different for the next number of years, but it'll keep going. It's not, you know, you're not shutting the door on it completely. I think the other thing that I'm seeing is a lot of the scientific associations are really stepping up and coming together to become those sources where we can do better about educating the public around what indirects are and what science is and how it works and maybe also why it takes so long and costs so much money.
Mm-hmm. Sarah?
You know, like both Liotta and Kiyomi said, I think it's really just what I do that drives me in the end. You know, I probably could have, entered a different profession and possibly made more money with less training. But I did what I did because I love it and because I think science is so important and so critical to the world. And so that's where I try to keep my focus. If I spend too much time thinking about what's happening in the world around me and the havoc it's wreaking, it will bring me down. Mm-hmm. But focusing on the science is what keeps me going.
May I add one more thing?
Mm-hmm.
So I think the second thing that I'm really focusing on is, you know, small acts of resistance. I think one of the biggest strengths of scientists is that, you know, we are creative. We can come up with creative solutions to solve problems. And I think this censorship, this cut of funding, all the other kind of changes that are happening, we just need to, you know, continue to be creative and come up with, you know, new solutions to continue to do the important work that we do, with these kind of additional restrictions and obstacles.
Well, how are congressional leaders and community members advocating for the life sciences?
So our representative for UCSD, Scott Peters, has been a really outspoken supporter of the sciences. He actually took the Department of Neuroscience chair, Dr. Brewers, to the recent Congress address by Donald Trump. And I think that really shows that he at least is committed to supporting our cause. I think that we definitely need, you know, a lot more support from our congressional leaders to really, you know, fight on behalf of scientists and public health. But I do feel that from San Diego, we are being, you know, we're fighting the fight. Our representatives are really, you know, advocating for us in this space.
What steps need to be taken to protect science going forward? Sarah?
Obviously, the biggest obstacle here is funding, right? So, like Kiyomi said, I think that we have to focus on finding different ways to move forward and maybe find ways that are less reliant on the federal government, which is feels sad to say, but I think that might be our reality, at least currently. But, you know, we all need to be fighting for our congressional leaders and the federal government to understand the value of what we do. And that's really the bottom line.
Kiyomi?
Yeah, I think I'd second all of that. I'd also say that as leaders in science, we need to make science more accessible. We need to make it better understood. We need to do a better job sharing what it means and the impacts that it has on people's daily lives. You know, scientists admittedly are maybe not always the best at explaining what we do. We use a lot of acronyms and a lot of big words. But, you know, if we could get back to the roots and help people understand that this is going to have an impact on them and what it means to them or their grandmother or their aunt or their neighbor, I think that is a way that we as scientists can do some things where, you know, I don't think we can go and fight all the big fights, but we're certainly all educators and we could be better community educators.
Well, and speaking of making science more accessible, I mean, what do you really want the public to take away from our conversation about science? Liana?
Yeah, I think the main thing that I want to emphasize is that representation and diversity in science and a scientific workforce really makes us, you know, safer in terms of public health. It helps us do better research. It helps us get more creativity from, you know, all corners of the country and the world in the same room to solve really, really challenging problems. And so I really think that we need diversity, equity, inclusion, and accessibility in science, or else we won't be able to solve, you know, the most pressing biomedical health problems that we face today.
And Sarah, I'll let you have the last word here.
So I think that Kiyomi's absolutely right. We need to do a better job of educating the public about what we do and why. And I think the thing to take home from this entire conversation is that we all know, or we even experience, people who are suffering through chronic diseases, you know, having medical problems, and we can't treat those and find effective therapies and find ways forward to help people with them without scientific research. And that's really why what we do is so important.
I've been speaking with Sarah Lemire, assistant professor at UCSD School of Medicine. Also with us, Kiyomi Komori, senior director of translational medicine at Uniquity Bio, and Liana Rosito, biomedical graduate student researcher at UCSD. I want to thank you all for sharing your experiences and your insight today. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much
thank
for having
you.
Us.
That's our show for today. I'm your host, Jade Hindman. Thanks for tuning in to Midday Edition. Be sure to have a great day on purpose, everyone.